Well, look, I'm not an auditor or an actuary or anything else like that, and I don't know how they calculate their figures, but that would indicate that they would be looking at approximately 1 million infections by the time November or whenever it is comes around. Now, that would mean that we would be having 1/5 of the current world's population's infections. And I just think that, to me, that sounds very unlikely, but I'm not going to make pronouncements on it because they're very clever mathematical people and they're using models and they're deciding on how it is going to work. I also don't think that they've taken into account factors like wearing masks out there and whether that's going to decrease the transmission rate. But to me, it seems unlikely, but I'm not going to discount and say that it isn't going to occur.
Critical care is your speciality. Is there a possibility of shortages of critical care and ICU units going forward?
Well, certainly there will be. Cape Town's currently undergoing their surge. Gauteng hasn't yet started the surge. Cape Town is under huge pressure from an ICU point of view. But do remember that in South Africa, we've got very few actual intensivists anyway. Mostly the ICUs are managed either by anaesthetists or by general physicians. And so a lot of the expertise is not there anyway. But I would foresee that when the ICUs are completely full, then one would have to perform some form of triage, which would mean that you would have to be selecting patients that are most likely to survive, or should I rather say deselecting those that are least likely to survive.
I listened yesterday to a US expert, Dr. William Hasseltine, talking about that there used to be almost a 90% mortality rate if you are on a ventilator, but they've managed to bring that down to about 30%, he said.
Yeah, well, I think that was because of the fact that they immediately ventilated or put patients onto a mechanical ventilator as soon as they were hypoxemic or their oxygen levels were low. And that was thought to be the ideal practice initially. But in fact, what we've been doing is seeing if we can avoid putting the patients onto mechanical ventilation. So we will be starting therapy on them, and we will be at the same time giving them other options like high-flow nasal cannulas or CPAP or even just a plain nasal cannula initially to see whether they can maintain their oxygenation. And at the same time, we get them to turn themselves over into the prone position, which also improves oxygenation. And in very many cases, we can avoid actually the necessity for ventilation. The whole idea is to try and get on top of the hyperinflammatory response, the hyperinflammatory phase, before it leads to a situation where you require mechanical ventilation. And if you can, well, then you've got a much better prognosis.
Are some people actually dying of heart attacks and cancer that are reported as COVID-19 cases?
I'm sure that people are dying of heart disease and cancer because they're not prepared to come to hospital worrying about catching COVID. I think that a large number of patients with non-communicable diseases are not being adequately treated at the moment. Certainly in South Africa, a large number of patients are not coming to hospital to collect their HIV medicine, for example. So those patients, both HIV and TB, there's an urgent search for those patients to go out and find them to actually make them come and get their therapy. Do remember that from the other point of view, that COVID-19 can actually precipitate heart attacks because it does also have an effect on the heart and on your coagulation system. So it could itself cause heart attacks. There's no evidence that it causes cancer, and I would doubt very much that people are having their deaths recorded as being COVID if they happen to come in with cancer. So when we get a patient who comes in and dies, we would swab them and we would assess to see whether in fact they were positive or not positive. I think that there are very few that are being mislabeled.
A lot has been written recently about the various treatments for COVID-19. What is being used in South Africa and what are your views on these different treatments?
Well, lots of people are still using hydroxychloroquine because it does have efficacy in the lab. It's been shown in the lab to inhibit growth of the virus, but that's looking at a non-in vivo situation. In other words, not when it's been given to humans. there was a lot of excitement by that French investigator, Gautre, who performed a study which showed that there was benefit in terms of outcome and mortality. But that was a very poorly performed study, and it was certainly has not been reproducible. And now there have probably been at least five studies saying that hydroxychloroquine is of no value either in patients who have severe disease or even in mild disease. Some people have been taking it like Trump as prophylaxis. There's also no evidence at all that it works as prophylaxis. And certainly patients who have been on it have been recorded as having caught COVID-19 anyway. So to me, I'm not at all excited about hydroxychloroquine. I don't think it's of value. Its primary use is in the management as a disease-modifying agent in autoimmune conditions, and there may well be a shortage of it in that setting. But I really don't think that there's good evidence at all that it actually works. And two recent studies published in the BMJ also showed exactly the same thing. So I just want to mention remdesivir as well. Remdesivir is an American drug, as you know. It's made by Gilead. The FDA authorized it for emergency use prior to the publication of the ACT study, which we still haven't seen. So the ACT study is we are still awaiting, and we don't know truly whether it actually showed benefit or not. The one published by Wang, which was from China in Lancet recently, had 437 people that were planned to be enrolled, and they only managed to enroll 237 because their epidemic had decreased, so they couldn't find enough patients to actually put it in. So it was therefore underpowered to make any sort of qualified statement about its efficacy. And what they did is they then took subgroups, which made even smaller numbers, and then they looked to see whether if it was given before or after 10 days after the onset of symptoms. And they then found a non-significant trend towards benefit in patients who took it before or within the 10-day period after the onset of symptoms. Very unexciting, no mortality difference or anything. So it's expensive. It's got to be given intravenously. And unless the ACT study comes out and shows something really spectacular, I don't think it's going to be an important benefit in terms of therapy.
There's no miracle cure or treatment
right now.
Nothing
is yet. Nothing is yet.
So if we can now look at the future, where are we in South Africa with critical care? Are we going to cope? When is the peak coming? What are you expecting?
Well, the peak's going to come at different times in different areas. And as I say, Cape Town is already undergoing their surge. Currently, they're sort of running at about maximum. One has to hope that patients will get better at the same rate as new admissions are coming in. Otherwise, yes, they will be overwhelmed, and then there's going to be a major problem. Certainly, private hospitals are going to have to be brought on board. And from the public hospital point of view, that when they are overrun, private hospitals will have to be taking in patients as well. And we just have to then manage, as other countries have done, even though the health services have been overwhelmed. For example, in New York and in Italy, we're just going to have to cope. We're a big believer in the use of corticosteroids at the time that patients present with pneumonia. They shouldn't receive corticosteroids if they have the early phases of the disease. But if they do come in with pneumonia and they've got hypoxemia, their oxygen levels are low, we start corticosteroids early. And there have been two studies now which have demonstrated benefit and a reduction in mortality. And so that we feel is the way to go in order to try and decrease progression to the hyperinflammatory phase, which is the phase at which most of the mortality actually occurs. Thereafter, we're also using, or some of us are using, a monoclonal antibody directed against a specific aspect of the inflammatory response. Now, it's a monoclonal used for rheumatoid arthritis, and we've seen quite a little bit of success using it in that setting as well. So there are therapies that will treat the actual response that the patient has, whereas we don't, as far as I believe, have any effective antiviral therapies.
So now with lockdown being lifted, are you expecting far more cases?
I mean, certainly Cape Town, I doubt, is going to come out of stage 5. They're going to be kept in there because they're really surging. Mm-hmm. And we're going to move to a stage 3, which is really not a massive lift. some of the school children will be going back, but we don't believe that that's actually going to cause a major problem, either to the school children or to the other people involved. In other words, they're very unusual for a child to bring home the virus to the parents or to the grandparents. But older people are still going to be encouraged to stay at home. We're still going to be using masks. Only certain people are going to be allowed to go to work. It's not a full lifting of lockdown. It's going to be a staged or a gradual lifting.